Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. You know the deal. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And as always, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Sex.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Nicole. You cheated on me this week with another podcast. I don't know if I can forgive you on that. How was it? Was it
Zombie Pirates?
You reviewed the movie Zombie Pirates.
Yes, and overall, we agreed it was a pretty decent movie. It had some flaws, but for an indie flick, it was pretty good.
You're telling me a movie named Zombie Pirates has flaws?
Well, it's not what you'd think. It has a plot.
Does the plot involve zombies and pirates?
It does, yes, and ritual magic.
Well, I guess they didn't have room for that in the title. You want to hear some good titles? How about Gentleman's Choice? That's a good title. Dark Beauty. That's a good title. Goodbye Stranger. That's a good title. Redline. These are all evocative titles, and these are all books that have been written by our guest today. And like we were saying when we kind of tried to start this last week and there was a hurricane and we couldn't do it, every time we have a writer on the show, it's always good.
Absolutely.
To the point,
I almost wanted to rebrand this show and just talk to writers, but Nicole wouldn't have it. So, but today we're talking to a writer, very fascinating story, and fascinatingly prolific, because I know, Nicole, you're going through your script, taking a while to get that done. I know you're getting a lot of notes. Our guest today has four books already out this year with another one on its way. And he went from the corporate world to the artistic world. And we're going to hear about everything he's got going on and why he did that and how he did that. Blake Rudman.
Thank you. As far as the writing is concerned, I've always been passionate about writing and storytelling. So I started doing it, when I was obviously much younger, but I decided to go a different route as far as work is concerned. But right. I always kept outlines. I always started progressing the idea of finally putting pen to paper and completing a novel. I actually moved to the Bay when I first got out of college to start writing, but I just ran out of money. So, okay.
But that happens to a lot of writers, and we'll get into all of that. But before, I got to match your energy. You're already telling your whole life story, and we haven't even started. This way, I got this Ray's energy drink. This is the best. This is our sponsor, Ray's energy drink. I don't know if you drink energy drinks, but if you do, this is the one to have because they got great flavors like Baja Lime, which I'm drinking right now, Voodoo's Fruit Punch, Galaxy Burst that tastes like Fruity Pebbles. The best part about this. Zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. I'm going to take a sip of this. Delicious. And you can get this at vitamin shops. You can get this at gyms. But why pay full price? Use our code in the description and get 15% off a case of Ray's energy drinks. So, Blake, let's try to go linear now. Now, where did you grow up? Because you did not grow up in the Bay Area.
I grew up in Dallas.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. That's cool. I performed at the Goth Festival in Deep Ellum a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Dallas was not what I was expecting.
Yeah, it's grown a lot, I would say, probably. But Deep Ellum is where we spent a lot of time growing up in North Dallas. So Deep Ellum's the South Dallas. That's completely expanded, but that's where I grew up.
Right. Nicole, Deep Ellum is like it's like the Silver Lake of Dallas. It's like the hipster part of town.
Oh, cool.
You would like it. It's definitely a lot of fun. And like I said, I was expecting, you know, your typical Texas, shit kickers with the cowboy boots and all that shit. But it was like, wow, there's some pretty cool people there. I was half expecting to go to Austin to meet people like that, but I met them in Dallas.
Silver Lake's a good example. Is that where you live? You live in Hollywood, West Hollywood, in that area?
Yeah, yeah. I live in Los Feliz, which is right next, even more hipster than Silver Lake. And
yeah.
Nicole lives in Koreatown, which is becoming its own hipster hub. So You're familiar with LA. How do you know LA so well?
I was the built a company with Harry Morton. I lived in LA in Pink Taco. You know the restaurant Pink Taco.
Yeah.
But that's what I did corporately for a little bit. I ran that company.
Oh, that's
really
cool.
Harry. Yeah. We took it out of Las Vegas and then built it in Century City. Right. He passed away actually during COVID.
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that.
Harry. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with West Hollywood, Silver Lake, all of that. I lived in L.A.
Right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Harry Morton is behind Morton Steakhouse, like real big. Is that right?
Yeah, his father's Peter Morton, who started the Hard Rock Cafe.
Okay.
And then his grandfather's Arnie Morton, who did Morton Steakhouse.
Okay. So, yeah. And I know Pink Taco, like I said, was a biggest institution at the Hard Rock for a long time. And
yeah,
now it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of you.
Well, I was president of the company, but I would say it's probably because of Peter.
Yeah.
You know, I was pretty young. I was like 26.
Yeah. How do you become like the CEO of a big restaurant chain at 26? Now, obviously you're very precocious and you're not that old now. I can see it. So, although maybe not. I'm looking at the record collection back there and I'm seeing a lot of 80s and 60s and all sorts of stuff. So I don't know how old you are. You might be Benjamin Button,
love
for
music,
all I know.
So I've got tons of music. I'm 40. I just turned 45.
Okay. Yeah. We're about the same age. Yes. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Now it's all coming together, but you don't look it though. You look about 35. Yeah. But that explains the Pearl Jam and the Cure and all that stuff and all that stuff. So, I mean, you bring people over there. You gotta be impressed with that vinyl.
So got a lot of vinyl. I'm really into music. It helped soothe my mind for like until I start exploding with creative thought and writing. So it's really my meditation.
Does it influence your writing? Like
oh,
the certain
yeah,
thoughts?
Of course. My next book that comes out, Kutri. It'll be out in a couple weeks. It's dystopian. There's a lot of references from, there's a good amount of pop culture references. A lot of them are music related. And I would say that a lot of my writing is significantly influenced by music. I mean, some of my writing a lot of it is on the darker end, but
I noticed that's why you're on the show.
Yeah, it's certainly a darker end. And, you know, I would say that I really listen to a lot of Radiohead before I start really getting into heavy writing. It calms me. I listen to the Adore album by Smashing Pumpkins.
Love it.
I'll just go through the whole thing from beginning to end. Abbey Road, all of them, just to kind of get me in the mindset.
Do you have an album that you listen to, Nicole, when you write? Or before you
No, but what happens is every once in a while I'll hear a song like, let's say, Devil Inside or Resistance by Muse. And sometimes a song will make me think of writing a story based off that song. Like my story Obscura is off of the song One Headlight by the Wallflowers.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's really recognizable, but I think if I told people where the song and the influence came from, they get it. But it doesn't really, I don't reference it in my work. I just am very inspired by the imagery of some lyrics.
Well, if they're over 35, if they're under 35, they're like, who, what, huh? What, headlight, what? You guys just don't listen to anything while you're writing?
I can't. I have to be able to have like quiet or the other thing where I'm at like a restaurant where there's like white noise behind me.
Mm-hmm. Blake?
No, I absolutely listen when I'm writing. So, all music constantly. So, it's hard for it to be. I'm a single dad. I have a 3-year-old daughter. So having complete silence anyway would be almost nearly impossible.
Right.
No, but yeah, but sometimes it's good. It just depends. I think I can manage the music and the writing now at this point.
Okay, I thought I was doing something wrong. I didn't know what was going on because.
No, I mean, I just get I like the music, and I'll get caught up in the music, and I'll get a little distracted from my writing. That's all that'll happen. So yeah, I usually try to have like the TV on either. Like I had a friend who would they would put the TV on mute and put on music, and they would have watch an old show that they already recognized in the background and listen to music while they wrote. So some people like extra distractions.
Right. I guess I'm one of those people. I don't know. Are you sure they weren't doing the Pink Floyd Wizard of Oz thing or?
No, they were watching. I think this is so messed up. They were watching The Passion of the Christ on repeat on mute.
Wow.
As you do.
they were writing a scary book, and that was their inspiration. So, you
I like the I haven't done that Pink Floyd Wizard of Oz thing since like the late 90s, but I enjoyed that.
Well, now on YouTube they do it for you. You don't have to even sync it up. It's already done. But I like to listen to like something that's very like airy, like My Bloody Valentine, like shoegaze or dream pop or Cocteau Twins, something that it's good and it sets a mood, but it doesn't really overwhelm you where you're like really getting into the song. But that's just me. But I'm trying, because I think, you know, they say that if you match some music up with any music with any TV show, it's going to match up at some point.
Agreed.
Somehow. So I got to do some more experiments like that. I'm looking like you got Thriller on the Wall, like play Michael Jackson's Thriller, and then play like I don't know, The Godfather, and they're probably at some point like when the Thriller, they're probably shooting somebody. You know, it'll probably match up. You never know.
I'd probably put in right now. Lately, it's been Radiohead or Johnny Cash.
Sure.
And maybe Fleetwood Mac, something that's a little lighter.
Right.
And it just really depends. Sometimes I'll go Tool or Danzig.
Right.
You know, it really just depends on how intense it's getting.
I was going to say, some of these books you have get pretty intense. I'm not sure. Probably for Dark Beauty, there's probably a lot of Tool and a lot of Danzig's probably too. And I met Danzig once. I was at a fetish thing, and the guy's like 5'2". It's really weird. He's like a square. He's like built like a square. It's like 5'2" and like 5'2" wide, but all muscle.
I waited on him a couple of times back when I was a waitress.
Yeah,
good. Yeah, he looked, average, not bad, okay. Not good.
All right, well, that's good. Very not.
I wasn't disappointed with it, you know, but he wasn't like generous or anything like that. He was just like average. I got what I deserved, I guess.
Yeah, 20%. Yeah, I know how it goes. But so when you get out of school now, how do you? I'm really probably more fascinated than I should be, being a frustrated artist my whole life, in that you conquered the corporate world really fast. How did you do that? Please, we're both broke. Please tell us. I'm kidding.
I started working at the Mirage at the casino.
Ah.
I was a freshman in college, and Steve Wynn and his group of people ended up mentoring me.
Wow.
And that's fantastic.
And at the time, obviously, those were really big names then. So I just kind of went with that. And anytime somebody would say, hey, Blake, you know, we got something for you in New York, or we have something for you in Europe, but you have to move. And I just moved all over. I just
That's great.
Lived everywhere. I was willing to relocate constantly because of the I wanted the experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So did you go to college at UNLV?
I went to UNLV, yeah.
Now, how do you go from Dallas to UNLV? How did that? What happened there?
I wanted to get out of Dallas.
Right. But man, Vegas—that's quite a culture shock.
I wanted the experience. You know, it seemed like, I mean, something different than just going to a different state to go to some school in the middle of rural America. I wanted. I wanted an opportunity to actually like assimilate in a city, but yet still like be going to school, but then also work and make money. And that just, it was either New York or it was Vegas.
Vegas.
I love Vegas. I try to travel there as often as I can. And last time I was there, we actually spent a lot of time at the Wynn. My friend, Matt, it's his favorite casino in the whole place. He thinks the Wynn is just amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is.
I remember when it was just built, my girlfriend at the time were walking through there. It's like 2005. You're probably working there. And we're walking around and my girlfriend was like, I don't know about this. It's kind of tacky. If Steve Wynn was right here, I would tell him exactly what you said. And Steve Wynn was right there. Was like, oh my God, he's right there. And I went up to him and she's like, no. And I went up to him and I said, are you Mr. Wynn? He's like, yeah. And I shook his hand. I was like, I'm very impressed. And then I introduced my girlfriend. He introduced his wife. Very nice. And then as always happens, when they meet celebrities with their wives, they drag them away as soon as they can. Like, oh, we got to go, Steve. But he was a very nice guy. What did Steve Wynn teach you? Because obviously he has a head for business like nobody else.
For sure.
So he had the vice president at the time was this gentleman named Artie Nathan. And they basically, his wife was Elaine Wynn. They basically taught me, I learned all the management positions within basically the whole casino and then also the Treasure Island. And so it was a Mirage, a Treasure Island. And then after that, I opened the Mandalay Bay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Three of my favorites. And what was it about you in your early 20s that he saw in you?
I got a scholarship from high school, a National Academy of Achievement, like a presidential scholar. And they wanted me to go there for the honors program instead of going to Cornell. So I chose there.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
If they would let me work at the Mirage.
Wow. Wow. And then so you conquered Vegas. They sent you to Europe. They sent you to New York. You were all over the place living the high life. I mean, you opened the Mandalay Bay. So I probably saw you at the Foundation Room once or twice.
Yeah, possibly. I opened it up, the big place at the time was Rum Jungle.
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
Right.
And so that was from the beginning. It was just like they had never really experienced that in Vegas. And so that was the first one to really.
That was like the dawn of the club scene.
Yeah, that was the first one in 99.
Okay, yeah. I was living there a little after that, but it was, Rum Jungle. They had that place with the ice. They had the Foundation Room.
Yeah.
Foundation Room was great. Here's another dumb story I have for you for Vegas. You're just reminding me of all these things, and I should be talking about you and your achievements. But one time, my friends and I went up to the Foundation Room. Because they knew somebody, and we had a great time. Foundation Room was on the top of Mandalay Bay, Nicole.
Oh, I have a story about it, too. I'll tell you after you finish yours.
Anyway, so this whole show is about the Mandalay Bay. But we were up at the top, and so we were there. We're partying. When we leave, it's like 3 in the morning, and we ran into the guy, the lead singer of Quiet Riot, when he was still alive. And we're like, oh, my God, it's you. And he had like a really bad wig on and the whole thing, but he's like, you know, tight pants, the whole thing. He's like 50 years old, but we're like, hey, it's cool, it's the guy from Quiet Riot. He's like, what are you doing here? Like, man, I tried to get in the Foundation Room, but the door guy didn't know who I was. And we're like, dude, and we got his number. We're like, hey, or he got our number. We're like, hey, anytime you want to go to the Foundation Room, you can hang with us. And he died like 2 weeks later.
Aw, that's awful.
And he was actually dating Tommy Ray Brown, our friend at the time, if you remember that story.
I remember, yeah.
And Nicole, what's your Foundation Room story?
Oh, I was just going to say, I was going to ask, are you a fan as a writer? Or are you a fan of Grant Morrison? Do you know who he is?
Grant Morrison. Sounds
familiar. He
wrote
comics mostly, but he has a couple of books too. He's a very interesting author, very prolific. It works better if you know who he is. But he's
big in the comic book world.
really big in the comic book world, but his stuff is just so good. Like, he also wrote like a couple of books and I enjoyed them, but so he just threw an event. It makes more sense if you know who he is, because he's like this cool guy and he's like bald and like got intense eyes and he kind of looks like Lex Luthor and he really likes Superman a lot. So he like threw a whole party there at the Foundation Room, and that was a really cool trip I had to Vegas. I paid like $1,000 to attend this big conference, and then one of the after parties was at the Foundation Room.
That was recently?
No, it was like 2014, probably.
14.
I was going to say, because you got out of the comic book world around that time. What would have been even better if that story is if he was dressed like Lex Luthor? And he had that whole costume.
Wears clothes that are kind of sci-fi. He looks really cool. Like, it was really cool seeing him DJ. It's like watching Daft Punk with a person.
Oh, okay. So, Ren, you got to give us your best Foundation Room story now. Like,
oh, jeez. You know, the thing about me is when I was doing all of it, and not just Rum Jungle, but I mean the...
Or Rum Jungle, if you want to substitute that, that's fine.
We opened Studio 54, too.
Right, MGM. Awesome.
In the MGM, when that first got going, I was so busy opening them and working on that. I mean, the experience. So, gosh, stories. Okay, I'll give you a story. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin. When Mike Tyson beat Holyfield, or when he lost to Holyfield, right, in the MGM, I was doing I was working at the Mirage, but I also was working part time at the MGM Grand, getting the experience there. And they ended up, actually MGM took over pretty much everything, but Tyson's people went crazy, and I was working at the front desk, and they shut all the doors internally, and they rushed, everybody rushed over the front area of the front desk. They started taking everybody's poker chips. Everything got taken.
Really?
And I was in the middle of a mayhem fight when I was like 18 years old, and people getting their bones broken, getting trampled. Oh, man. Crazy. That was at the Mandalay Bay in
97. 97, wow.
Yeah. It was that was intense.
Wow.
When I worked at the Mandalay and at the Mirage, and the MGM in the 90s, the late 90s, and you never heard this from me, although this is live.
Nobody will hear this.
They were finding about a body every other week, like under the beds in the hotels.
That's scary.
Really?
Yeah, it was intense. Actually, that's where some of my original, some of my first writing really started, is just because of how intense the casinos were, you know, in the 90s. Sure. I mean, it's not really like that anymore, just because now there's, you know, I think everybody kind of like has really, you know, gauged what they can afford to spend or not spend. And I think that it's I don't know if the gaming is as prevalent anymore as like actually like the entertainment aspect of like going to the bars or the clubs or going to the shows. But back then, you know, I mean, like the actual slots, poker, all that stuff was so big that there was so many suicides and murders. Oh, wow. Within Vegas. That's what actually got me to leave Vegas.
Sure.
Because it was
that
so
would be intense. Very intense. I remember I was in Vegas briefly. I was just going through on my way. I was passing through on a Greyhound, and while I was there at a layover, they had found a head in a box. And I can't remember which casino, but there was a head in a box.
Oh, I thought you meant on the Greyhound bus. That wouldn't surprise me.
No. I was at the Greyhound station watching the Vegas news, like the morning news, and like they just were like. And the funny thing was, after that, they went to their tie contest where they were talking about who had the best pink ties. Like, they went directly from having a head in a box to, oh, you had such a lovely pink tie. It really stuck with me. It was a very violent memory. I can't imagine being there and having to find bodies regularly. That'd be so scary.
Yeah, it's as I said, that was a big one that got me to leave. It was just, you know, it's just time for a change. So, but
I would say so.
The place to go next, was it less murder?
After Las Vegas, I went to San Francisco.
Okay.
And then after San Francisco was really when I started moving all over the place. I mean, That's when it was Texas. I lived in L.A. I lived in a little bit in Paris, a little bit in Florence, Washington, D.C., New York. Mm-hmm. Just everywhere.
Well, you're obviously good at your job because I never heard of a big riot happening after Tyson lost to Holyfield. So you got that covered up pretty good. I believe you. I completely believe you.
You didn't hear about that big riot when it happened?
No, I remember when Tyson fought that guy and Tupac got in a fight and then they got shot afterwards.
Yeah.
But I never heard about the Holyfield thing. I never heard anything about that.
Yeah, that was really bad. That was awful.
I'm sure. Well, now Mike Tyson's doing life coaching, so I'm sure it's okay. But so you bounce around and we're gonna get to writing in a second. But you're obviously a good looking guy, and everywhere you went, the ladies were all over you, I'm sure. And which brings me to my point, because we have a predominantly male audience, and if you want to attract the ladies, you need to get Tactical Soap. That's one of our sponsors, Tactical Soap. This is pheromone-infused soap. And you have three different types, Bond, Durden, and Maverick. And they have three different types of each. They have deodorant. They have cologne. They have soaps. And if you want to be a sexy guy and attract the women, use our promo code in the description and get yourself some Tactical Soap. First off, washing with soap and water is always a good step. Getting women. But if you use Tactical Soap, even better. So now you've been in the corporate world, you've been in riots in Vegas, you've been doing all this, you've been in Texas. You've always been a writer? Because it's amazing to me, you have 5 books coming out this year. So I take it that it took years to write all these, or did they all come out in like 6 months?
Oh, no, it took... I have many more books. I'm actually working on, about 4 of them right now. That'll be coming out. It took me, I would say about 4 to 5 years for each book.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've always been writing. I wrote ever since I was a kid. So yeah, obviously my plan originally was to fully go into writing, but as I said, I ran out of money. So then I figured I would just go heavy into the corporate world. And then at some point I would stop that. And then I would go straight into the writing aspect. And so that's what awesome. I did. Yeah. I prefer not to be in corporate America. I prefer just to write at my own leisure, you know, and do that. So that's what I do now.
But you like having the money saved from corporate America that allows you to do the writing.
Well, I mean, yeah, I did. I worked hard. I compromised a lot, though. You know, I mean, but I worked hard. So that's what I do now.
That's awesome. I'm glad you get to live your dream finally.
Thank you. Thank you.
So and these books are very interesting now. Now, why 4? Or I mean, gonna be 5, maybe 6 or 7. Why are they all coming out at once? Shouldn't you do like one a year? Isn't that the plan that usually writers do, or one every 2 years?
So my plan, I probably would have done, it probably would have gone that route, but I ended up moving from Northern California to Florida, and they were all finished, and they should have probably come out a couple years back, but I got divorced. I just waited on it, and then Hellbound Books knew that I had written some books, and James and I spoke, and he flew out to see me and went through my books, and he said, listen, we got to get these out there. You know, I mean, they're ready to go. These are good. You've got a lot of them. You've got a lot of good ideas and concepts. So those 4, the first one to hit was Gentleman's Choice. Then after that, Dark Beauty, and then Goodbye Stranger. Red Line's out now. Cooch Reel come out in a couple weeks. And then I'm working on a number of other ones now. So, I mean, it's just, you know, at this point, it's pretty, pretty voracious. So I'm going to assume that the next couple years, at least another 5 to 6 books.
Right.
Right. Do you get feedback from your audience? Like, do you have, like, I have a small community and I really enjoy getting the feedback. Do you have a community that, like, reads your work and lets you know what they think about it?
So that's a good question. I guess I would say that even though I was in corporate America and, you know, did the things I did in as a on a personal level, I'm kind of I kind of isolate myself a little bit just with my daughter and myself. You know, we do things all over, but as far as the feedback is concerned, I don't really send it out to ask people their opinions as much. Only I would say the editor. You know, you know, anybody from Hellbound Books. I have a couple friends that I bounce things off of, but I'm on social media with Hellbound Books, but I'm actually myself not on any social media. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I ever really see are reviews on the books I've written. But I would be open to any feedback, but I would say that, I'm kind of not really out there that much, you know. So,
well, you've gotten some feedback. I've seen some TikTok, lots of reviews, some other things. Tons, yeah, a lot of reviews. I mean, everybody's reviewing these. Yeah, I don't know if that's Hellbound Books or that's you, but they're sending it to the right people. People are reading them and they like. Yeah,
lots
them.
Of reviews. But I, during the actual process, I never send it out to get like opinions on that. I just wait till it's finished.
Right.
And then they go through it, they edit it, all that, and then it's out in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And these are provocative books. I like these concepts. And the first one, now why Gentleman's Choice first? I mean, I think I know why, because it's very in the zeitgeist as far as and Nicole, what this is about a reality show like The Bachelor or Love Island that apparently there is the dating show is blamed for a viewer's desk, and there's you don't know what's going on with the host, and there's a private investigator who's hired by the victim's family to infiltrate the show and get to what's going to happen. Do I have that right, Blake? I didn't want to.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's.
Is it because it's a reality show?
About the Bachelor, more or less, like. An extreme dark side of The Bachelor with contestants dying, you know.
Right. But, yeah.
And I thought that the actual show The Bachelor, I found it so amusing that everybody was, you know, spending so much time just consumed by it, and planning parties around it, and, you know, girls having other girls out just to like spend Monday nights watching The Bachelor, that I said, wow, it's like, would they be willing to go on the show if they knew they could die?
Right.
And so I decided, I thought to myself, well, would they go on the show knowing they're going to die, knowing all of this could happen? I thought, yeah, they would. So I decided to write a book on it.
That's,
you know, days, I flipped
these days, especially, yeah,
the cliche. And so, yeah, I mean, Gentleman's Choice has done well. You know, that was the first one out. So, right.
Yeah, you know, different girls than I do. The girls I know are not having bachelor parties. But, and you know what? If these books really start hitting, you could be the next bachelor. You realize that?
I don't know if they want a 45-year-old bachelor with a.
Their newest guest is a golden bachelor. I don't know how old he is, but he's over 60.
Oh, is there a new? Oh, there's a new. Let's see,
there's a new bachelor. I'm not joking about this.
I knew Nicole would be up on this.
Over 60, like all the women are over 60. The bachelor is over 60, and they're all going to be competing. That's the next big thing for the bachelor. It sounds like I'm making it up, but I'm not.
Damn it! So the guys have to be 62, because if all the girls are 60, I would go on that show and clean up.
You would.
Women over 60 find me so irresistible. I don't know what it is.
And these women look really good for their 60s. Like, they look like, I've seen I'm one of the people they send it to because I watch a lot of ABC. And so I get like, my algorithm sends me all these different bachelor things. So I see all that stuff. I see all the Dateline 2020, everything that's ABC, I get in my algorithm. So.
But you've seen the women over 60 I've gone out with.
Oh yeah, no. When I saw these women, I thought of you. I was like, Mark would do really good with them, and they're really attractive. They're smart and they're experienced because they're 60.
That's why I date them. Well, first off, they're the only ones that say yes to me, but that's why I date them. But once again, we got off on another tangent. I didn't mean to. But
sorry.
But so, no, that's okay. Well, I figured we go off on a bachelor tangent. So you don't want to be the new bachelor.
I haven't, I don't know. I don't think
so. That would be the ultimate irony.
I haven't even gone on a date for a couple of years, so.
Oh, you will.
I don't know about dating a slew of women, you know.
And also,
it would
be
very intimidating, I think. I would have a problem if I was like the Bachelorette. I wouldn't know how to handle dating that many men at one time. I'd be like, whoa.
Oh, that's your life anyway, Nicole. But you're in Florida, so. Speaking of women over 60, I'm sure you've been asked out, by some seniors at the grocery store. But yeah, for some reason. But yeah, it's no. I was on a show, Twins Happily Ever After, and they were going to set me up with their mom, and I got cut out. But yeah, there's so much weird stuff behind the scenes that you don't see. And do you really explore that in the book?
I mean,
how in depth did you get into the, how much research did you do on these reality shows?
Yeah.
It took a couple years.
Yeah.
That book started in 2016 is when I started. Then it got, I threw away the first copy. Then it got rewritten, threw it away. It was finally finished in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a good amount of time. Yeah, a good amount of research.
Right.
Sure.
So do you go behind the scenes where like people are doing two and three takes of what's supposed to be spontaneous?
I pretty much do as much research as I can on the topic if I can get that opportunity. And then mm-hmm. I picture myself and actually create a kind of sculpture and an outline when writing of me actually being those particular characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that with Goodbye Stranger as well, and it's done from multiple perspectives. So
right. That's a good way to
do
it.
Do you do anything supernatural with your books, or is it all human monsters?
No, I have another book that's coming out now that's supernatural. It's a modern supernatural and you know, present and a bit dystopian future book of Job, like the book of Job.
Okay.
And it's very supernatural, resurrection, a lot of supernatural fiction actually is coming out. So that's what I'm working on right now. I haven't done anything like vampires type thing, more like supernatural as in like, the other side of the veil, that you can't see.
Right. Tell me about, cause this is your first protagonist is Vanessa Young. And the stereotype is to have some like, you know, old dude Columbo guy be the detective, but you've got a woman as your detective, as your protagonist. That's fairly unusual.
I thought it would be interesting in some of the other books as well, concepts. I kind of want to get away from traditional writing. As I said, it's going to really start taking a series of going not only dystopian, but supernatural, but also switching it from what you would expect the protagonist to be to now kind of flipping it to something different. I want to get more of the female audience. I don't know if they were going to be as big into my crime thriller type noirs, but I wanted to get them in, and I thought this was a way to do it.
Right, and well, I'll tell you, most of the reviews I've seen are from women, and they love it.
That's awesome.
And but you've always been inspired by the noir type of fiction.
Yes.
Elmore Leonard type things like that.
Yes.
Like who else are your inspirations? Who did you read growing up that you really liked as far as a
dystopian wise? Interestingly, I would say that that I that I okay, I would say that I like objectivism, so I really like Ayn Rand. Dystopian wise, obviously Orwell. I like Huxley, Aldous Huxley. I got I really went when I was doing Goodbye Stranger. I did a lot of research, and Thomas Harris was really good motivation for me with them. Sure. Just through, I mean, you know, all of his books are amazing.
Yeah. Stuff, yeah.
So, I mean, I've got so many inspirations. Dostoevsky, I couldn't even begin to like to tell you. I mean, and then spiritual. Like, as far as like doing the spiritual fiction and everything going, I really like C.S. Lewis. I would say I really like the Fight Club, and I'm really trying to obviously Stephen King as well. I'm trying to just make more of a merge, but more modern. So I would say that, but influences wise, I would say for dystopian, it certainly happened when I was young, and that was definitely Orwell. 1984 right. was a big one for me.
Sure.
I like 1984. It's very well done.
And Animal Farm, all that stuff is great.
Love it.
And it's funny because, you know, just looking at these books, I haven't read them yet, but I'm just reading these synopses. You know, I could see all those influences, but I can also see they're coalescing into something that's definitely unique. Dark Beauty, which is probably the gothiest cover of them all, is about identical twins that. They apparently get acid thrown on them, and then all sorts of things ensue. That's crazy, and they have to rebuild their life. This is the one that I've seen more reviews on, and they love it. It's an amazing story about how these two
two
deal
sisters,
with that, and
two twin
that,
sisters.
And they I'm guessing they turn on each other, possibly.
It's not so much turning on each other. Both of them. You know, their most beautiful girls, aspiring girls in the world. One of them wants to be a doctor. The other one obviously just wants to go the route of modeling and acting. She eventually convinces her doctor sister to go that route. But I guess you would say the bad twin has a series of relationships that she completely controls. Mm-hmm. And when she finally gets to a point of achieving an ultimate success, one of her ex-drug dealing kind of pseudo-boyfriends can't stomach the fact that she wants nothing to do with him. And on the opening of the book, on their red carpet walk for their movie that just came out, he throws acid on the two most beautiful girls in the world and their faces melt off. And so that's how it starts. So
that's a pretty good start.
Yeah. So it's not as much as them turning on each other, although that does happen, but it's more or less the one of them decides that she's going to go get vengeance for all the guys and the people that have wronged her in her life. And the mask comes into place and she becomes more or less like a female serial killer.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's a good premise.
This is one I could see really turning into a good movie.
For sure.
And also, this begs the question, and I've said this many times on the show: why does every beautiful woman go out with the biggest assholes? What is that? You saw it in Vegas. You saw it in L.A. You saw it in Paris. What is this? It always
I think
happens
it's because they don't. Well, you'd have to ask Nicole for that. I don't know if I could give you that answer.
Yeah. Well, I've said it before. Girls don't think you're an asshole in the beginning. Usually, some women are attracted to assholes, but mostly there's a mask that these assholes wear in the beginning that the women don't notice right away. And then by the time that they notice, they're already like infatuated.
Trust me, I know a lot of women that after they threw acid on them would be like, he had his reasons.
I personally stopped dating assholes. The last three guys I dated were not assholes.
Okay. All right. So. but that's one. I definitely want to check that one. I want to check all these out. This is crazy. I think Goodbye Stranger is another one, Nicole, that you'll like.
Okay.
A wealthy, successful man whose wonderful family life masks a much darker side. Throw in a once trusting, increasingly suspicious wife, and the stage is set for twists and turns you never saw coming.
So Goodbye Stranger, I started that about I really outlined it and put the notes into it about a year before I even met my ex-wife. But it's actually based off of an NFL football player, which I won't go into detail, but I always thought that as pretty as they seem and as popular as they are, you know, some of these the leaders in any type of sport or industry, I always thought it'd be interesting to take the most American Pie type of guy and then then show an aspect of him that you couldn't even imagine, his silent partner inside that's yearning to get out.
This is the one about the NFL player.
This is it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And
nothing.
Okay. And you knew real NFL players. In fact,
I've tried to do something before that's even personal, but I can't even do that because it, you know. So I'm just more. I think I'd say I'm based at storytelling of other creative thought, but nothing of my own.
But you knew real NFL players in Vegas and LA, and you were and you know high achieving people, and you were high achieving at some point. So you got to know. At some point, you have to be somewhat cutthroat, no matter how nice your facade is. Steve Wynn, probably a real nice guy, but to get to where he got, he had to be not nice to some people.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that. I would say that I don't know if I was. I'd say that my novels, my thrillers here are going to be way more cutthroat. And then at times I necessarily was, but I mean, I had that in me. That's probably why I had to exit, because you can't do both.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So, but yes.
Right.
I can be pretty, I could be straight to the point and obviously aggressive when need be. And I think I embrace that in the writing now.
That's good. That's good. So, and yeah, it sounds like from talking to you, you excelled in that world, and you could still excel in that world if you wanted to, but it takes a toll.
Yeah, it was time to leave. I probably have about, you know, another 50, 60 concepts, ideas that I'd like to put to paper, and it's just way too hard to do that and maintain work. Plus, at the same time, you know, I have a little 3-year-old. I'd assume at some point maybe I'll get remarried, have some more kids. So I figured that I'd just be an author with a little girl and see what happens.
Producers of The Bachelor, take notes.
I don't know if I could ever do that.
And writing obviously helps, so you can be there with your daughter, and you can you don't have to travel all over the place, and you can write and all that. But the other thing about the NFL players now, there's a couple things going on now. Obviously, with the concussions and everything, it's come to light. I mean, there's, you know, there a lot of them are really not, you know, I grew up in San Diego, and Junior Seau was one of the best players, committed suicide. There's a lot of people that just messed up with concussions.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, it's just nerd culture has taken over. I don't know how people in school now, the jocks in school, they're getting bullied by the nerds. I don't know what I don't know what football players have got to do. So it's so weird to, and then also that's a profession, like every, like writing, like everything else, acting, comedy, modeling, the top 1% of 1% actually make it. So to get there is tough. So,
I fashioned some of the book in the beginning, actually a lot of research was put into Junior Seau.
Right.
So, that's actually how the whole concept of, the actual main, or the Preston Harrington starting off, who's a football quarterback, starting off, before he became, you know, the person he becomes, he actually does get hit multiple times, has multiple concussions, and that triggers something that already started, something that was already delicately, precariously waiting on the balance of, is he going to be good or a bad guy? And then that set it off. So, and that was because of Junior Seau, because I was such a big fan of him. And then to see the demise of that was very sad.
It really is. Nicole, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he was one of the best players of all time, linebacker. And he just had really bad. I mean, he just got, you know, he had so many hits that he had, you know, concussion syndrome, and he committed suicide. And it was,
that's awful.
Did he kill his family too? I forgot.
No, I think it was just himself.
Yeah. But yeah. I know that if I remember correctly, there was some abuse in the household and things like that. But
because of his condition.
You know, they keep remaking the helmets so it's less of an injury. But when you're hitting people with your head, it's not easy. You know, once again, another great concept. And we come up with these concepts. They're familiar enough, but they're completely original.
Thank you.
And a 300-pound football player coming at you that's a serial killer? What's scarier than that? Like, you know, Norman Bates is one thing, but when you got Junior Seau coming at you, you're not getting out of that.
I think this one will throw you for a loop when you read it.
I can't wait.
I think you'll be able to also see that it was the first novel thriller that I've done that I actually put as much research into picking out a couple particular characters or retired NFL players. And so if you're reading it, and since it appears that your pop culture obviously is going to be intensified here, you may be able to establish who you think that they are. And I really wanted to use the American type pie, all American boy persona. So this one really throws you for a loop.
Yeah. And there's nothing more all American football. And we just had the first week of the season, and it's all people are talking about Aaron Rodgers and all that. And it's, that's as American as anything. And these people, these guys that are, have sacrificed their whole lives to get to that position. And have taken so many hits, and their bodies just take so much abuse, and it's a wonder none of them have become serial killers. But hopefully, make sure that the NFL does not have a Goodbye Stranger as preferred reading for their players. But and then you got Redline, which is a terrorist thriller, another noir thriller, and apparently. There's a police detective that just having a nice day out with his wife and son, and then he gets involved in a whole global conspiracy and a terrorist attack.
I went to go see when Star Wars came out again, like when they started reissuing. I think it was maybe in 2016 or maybe 17 when another big one was coming out. I said to myself when I was there, I said, wow, these theaters are packed with people. Wouldn't it be amazing if at the same time when everybody's at a theater, deceptively, a new form of terrorism would be where they would bomb all of these theaters all over the world that are playing this movie. So everybody would then say, you know, we're never going to the movies anymore. But they would have set it up years before where they actually had the internal writers of code for Netflix and everything, that they had actually taken all of those guys and got the best programmers to change the pixelation on your TVs at home. So they knew that you would stay at home and now just watch Netflix or HBO or Cinemax or anything you'd watch. So they would actually convert you to a terrorism from the pixelation on your TV, which would blur your, more or less, your soul and start turning you into whatever they wanted. So they don't go to movies anymore. They stay home. They're watching TV. But subtly, through the pixelation of the TV, they're becoming jihadists.
Wow.
And who's to say that's not happening?
Yeah. So I wanted to do a new form of terrorism that would be more subtle.
No one's watching Cinemax anymore. But yeah, Netflix, Hulu. Trust me, they're all. I mean, think about how crazy the world is and how weird the people are. And then the global pandemic hits, and we're all watching. We're nobody's going to the movies. And they also had the, you know, I'm sure the Batman shooting had in 2012 or whenever. I'm sure that had an influence too.
Yeah, I just feel, I just felt like if they're going to go with it, if I feel, I feel like the deepest sort of terrorism comes, would come when you're at your most level of peace and you don't think it's happening. So that's how Red Line started.
Well, that's now. I know you read Ayn Rand, so let me ask: how deep in the conspiracy theories do you go? Because obviously, this is some MK Ultra stuff. But how deep do you go? I mean, talking conspiracies.
Ayn Rand was a huge influence, you know. So I mean, mm-hmm. Atlas Shrugged and the Fountainhead were some of the biggest ones for me. Going out, I go pretty deep into this conspiracy.
Right.
So
this, do you think this is happening? Do you think that this is happening? Everything's being recorded on TV, on computers, on phones, and you'll just mention something to somebody and you'll get an ad pop up. So this, something's happening.
I think that I think that through certain particular channels now on TV, and obviously through certain elements of spokesmen and marketing and anchors and all this stuff, there's certainly a level of manipulation that's going on. I don't necessarily believe it's through the pixelation, but it could just as well be through the marketing and the actual approach and the dialect, the actual verbiage and how it's being expressed. So yeah, I definitely feel like there's a level of manipulation. I mean, we have a country that's divided. You know,
yeah.
So, and it's completely divided more so than it's ever been. So that is definitely a sense of manipulation.
Deliberately so. Deliberately so.
Yeah, deliberately. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, especially, you know, you started writing this in 2016, which doesn't seem that long ago, but that was 7 years ago. And man, it's things have really changed. Even back then, you were allowed to actually talk to somebody, have a different opinion, and agree to disagree. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, no way.
Things gotten to extreme.
Very.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, everybody's like, it's 100% this or 100% that. And it's like, well, no, yeah. It's not 100% either. But, and that's all, maybe the, you know, I'm going to watch TV today. I'm gonna watch the pixelations and see what I see.
Well, you wouldn't be able to watch them. They'd be subtle enough to grab you without you even knowing.
I'm gonna concentrate. I'm gonna look right in the TV real close. You know what it is? Maybe we should start we should go to Goodwill's and just chuck our smart TVs that are recording us and get those old tube TVs, and then we'll be okay. I think that's what we need to do.
Well, I'm not going to lie. Most of my life is recorded on my phone, and my internet knows exactly. I mean, my algorithms are on pat. They know what I want. They know I want to have vegan meals, animals, mostly cats,
right.
And things that I watch on, things I stream, because those are the things I do on my phone. And so that's what I get every day. Every day I have a list of ads that are catered perfectly towards me. And I'm fine with it, because at least the stuff I want to see. Every once in a while, it'll be something I'm like, why did they send me that? But for the most part, they know exactly what I would be interested in. So my computer, my phone is very smart.
But was it weird in 2016 to come up with this concept? And now all these years later, and you have a 3-year-old daughter, and it's like, it's not that far-fetched anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. No, I didn't anticipate all the stuff that was going to go on with the country for sure, but I knew that something was brewing, and it just seemed like it made sense.
Mm. Well, it's very prescient, and I'm glad that you got it out now, because who knows if who knows what will happen in 2024. But it's definitely that. Nicole, these all sound like great concepts and great books to read.
Absolutely. Yeah. They sound like really good books.
And all completely different.
Yeah.
And the one more now, this was supposed to come out in August. What happened with Kutry?
Well, Kutry, since Redline just came out about 3 weeks ago, Kutry will be the next one. Kutry's dystopian. I actually wrote that before COVID. An epidemic comes, 90% of the world is more or less destroyed, and men outnumber women significantly. And in the midst of that, the government tries to put back society, but they want to put society back together the way they want it, mm-hmm. Which is no outside demographic influences. White marries white from that particular village, or Indian marries Indian from whatever village, from black with black, Latino with Latino. There's no interracial mixture. The government controls everything. And there's actually dowries that come back into play since men outnumber women so heavily. And Kutry's from a tiny little town that doesn't have very many people. Anybody from that town wants her as her wife because she's young and mm-hmm. she fits the bill. But she actually falls in love with a guy who's not from her town, and he's just your regular white guy. And mm-hmm. that starts a big problem because the government is not happy with that.
Wow.
I've dated black girls too. It can be a problem, but no, another great concept, and very prescient. I mean, you're like the Simpsons. You're like predicting everything. Is that another thing? Like you start a book about a global pandemic, and then a global pandemic hits. Are you like Nostradamus? What's going on here?
I don't know. I mean, I am writing one on the resurrection right now. So if Van Gogh and Hemingway come back in the next 6 months to say what's on the other side of the veil, then we'll know that I can, use my prophetic skills to write some more novels. I don't know. I guess I got lucky.
You're a very creative guy, and you got some great concepts. Now, after Kutry, what you say you got other books? Can you preview a couple of things you got coming up?
I'm gonna write. I've got a couple books. I'm gonna do a book called The Avengers of Blood. This is gonna be another spiritual. I would say almost Tarantino-esque, but it's going to be a totally different spin. Mm-hmm. When I'm going to set it back during the beginning of the meridian of time, and when Jesus obviously was killed, and I'm going to write a book, Avengers of Blood, in that basically somebody's going to avenge everybody responsible for the murder of Jesus, and within the time frame before he's resurrected. And and it's biblical in the sense that in the Old Testament, during the Moses times, if you killed somebody in somebody's family, then there was an avenger of blood, a kinsman or somebody they hired, generally a kinsman that would go and kill whoever or whomever in that other person's family is responsible for the murder. This person's going to take out everybody responsible for Jesus's murder, but intense.
Like Jesus Unchained.
Sort of. Yeah. And set during that time, and you'll get the dialogue, also the creative dialogue of actually seeing Pontius Pilate and all of those figures that we've heard about since we were kids, actually having that sort of dialogue before they're murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it wasn't me; it was him. And yeah.
But we know the truth already.
Yeah.
And then,
so your friend that writes to Passion of the Christ, have him look out for that, Nicole.
Yeah, Passion of Christ.
He'd probably like it. He likes revenge and he's Catholic.
I like it. It sounds cool.
Yeah, it's called The Avengers of Blood.
The Avengers of Blood.
And then Avengers of Blood. And then I have another concept I'm working on with a bunch of kids that grow up in Brooklyn during World War II, and they're reading an Avengers of Blood comic strip. So I'm going to merge them. And in the midst of them reading Avengers of Blood comic strip, and they're kids, they're, you know, anywhere from 14 to right before the draft age, they decide, a bunch of Jewish kids in Brooklyn, that they know what's going on with all these concentration camps and all these people dying, and these four kids decide that they want to stop the Holocaust. And so they try to get anywhere with uncles, anybody that works at the boat docks, to get them from New York to Poland, to Europe. And they finally are able to get over there, and it tells a story about four youths that are trying to stop Auschwitz. But it's it's intense, but it's also comedic, you know, in its intensity, because you got 15-year-old kids that think they're King David, you know. So I'm working on that too.
So you got a whole Rudman verse going on.
Yeah. And then I have a book right now. It's called the it's about the contestant, similar to, it's not The Bachelor, but I'm going to do another game show book about sort of like, I can't think of the 80s movie that came out. Anyway, it's about a game show that you can't win, that nobody ever wins.
Like The Running Man?
The Running Man, yeah.
Right.
I'm doing like a modern version.
Yeah, you can't stop me with 80s movies. So, okay,
yeah, The Running Man. More or less a little bit with, once again, a flip on the cliche, and it's modern. And then
any other Vanessa Young adventures?
So if that was to get picked up, then there'd be a series of those adventures, because I actually think that that particular book would do really well as a series.
Right.
I think it would do well. I mean, The Bachelor's a series, so why wouldn't Gentleman's Choice? I'm surprised actually that it hasn't been, like that nobody had done it before. So yeah, possibly.
There you go. And how did you get to, you know, with all your biblical upcoming events, this is upcoming books, this is very ironic. How did you end up at Hellbound Books?
So there's really a fine line between horror and fear and darkness, and then obviously spirituality. I mean, they really mesh. You need the good, you need the evil, you need both sides of humanity. And Hellbound really wanted to take another step forward and go into some different sort of psychological thrillers and dystopian. And James felt that, you know, I'd be a good match for him, something different.
That's great. And and how are the sales? How's it going? Are you how do you make money with books these days? Like, frankly, I got to ask you that as a businessman.
I mean, you, as far as the books go, I guess you just make the money off of selling the paperbacks, Kindle, and all that. But I guess the idea or the concept that would be eventually for them to go into some network sort of production.
Sure.
You know, but I mean, yeah, it's gone well. I mean, it's just the beginning, really. I mean, I think that my first book went out around maybe April or May.
Right.
And so that's the first time I ever even released anything. So, and there's already four out there. So, I mean, they're getting good reviews, you know, selling a number of copies. The gentleman who wrote The Devil's Advocate really enjoyed A Gentleman's Choice. He wrote a nice blurb on it. And that was a great movie when that came out. And so, yeah, I mean, they're doing well so far. We'll see how, you know, it goes. Just the beginning, really.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't even been 6 months.
No, it has not.
Published author of four, now going to soon be five books. I think it's great. I look forward to reading all these. These sound fantastic.
I recommend them to
anybody. So, Blake, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been great. Like I said, Nicole, when we have authors on.
Oh, yeah.
So I was telling her, I said, we should just, because everybody asked me, what's your podcast about? And then, like, nobody asked Howard Stern what this show's about. Nobody asked Joe Rogan what his show's about. I like to interview interesting people, but yeah. Everybody's like, oh, well, what's it about? So I was like, well, maybe I should rebrand and just talk to writers. And Nicole's like, no, I want to talk to everybody, but I really like talking to writers. And I think you're off to a great start.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both.
Took you 20 years to write these books, but they're all coming out now and people are loving them. And tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and how they can get a hold of these books.
Well, as far as the books are concerned, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, right now. I think there's a couple other ways, but there's three of them that are audio too now. So Gentleman's Choice, Dark Beauty, and I believe Goodbye Strangers shortly going to be audio, but the first two you can actually get audio. All of them will be audioed as well. As far as myself goes, the publishing company did set up like a Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. But as far as getting a hold of me, if anybody wanted, I mean, I guess I would assume I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, but they could go through those avenues as well.
Go to BlakeRudman.com. And also if you want to go to Hellbound Books Publishing.com, and you can get those books, and you can learn about Blake. And based on what I'm seeing, I think you got a great future, and I think this is going to be great. I think you're going to be laughing about how you worked so hard to get to the top of the corporate world, and now you're doing what you really put to do, which is to write great stories. These are fantastic.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. It's very nice.
Yeah. So definitely check those out. And hopefully Gentleman's Choice or one of these gets picked up. And I think they all would make great movies. So I think
for sure. Yeah.
Or TV shows. Obviously there's a strike now, so you time that right. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But Blake, thank you for being on.
Thank you. Thank you, Nicole.
Oh, and do you do the audio or somebody else does the audio?
No, somebody else does it.
Okay. I was going to say, I was wondering if you were confident enough to do the audio yet.
I've never given it a crack, but maybe one day I will do the audio on one.
Okay. Well, Hellhound Books, if you need somebody to do the audio, I'm available. Nicole, how did they get a hold of you?
I'm Nicole H6 on Facebook and Nicole 6 Books on Instagram.
And you've only put out one book this year, or actually it was last year, but
I usually put out a book every couple of years. That's my my go-to. So my book out this year is a poetry book, and it's available on lulu.com, lulu.com.
And that is called Slow Burn. That is your poetry book. And I am goth comedian on all social media, and I will complete a book or a screenplay soon. I keep telling myself that. I'm talking to a guy who's come out with 5 books this year. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
All right.